Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan. And my guest today is Bob Bruin. Before I tell you a little more about Bob, I want to tell you briefly about my week. I went to Los Angeles this week and did a deposition in the case of a man who abruptly killed himself, shot himself, while taking a Paxil and Xanax. He had no history of suicide at all. I don't want to talk in detail about it because it's an ongoing case. I then visited a man in jail who had a very upstanding career in the armed services and then in the police, but who ran into some tensions and was put on Zoloft and became very weirded out. And in this case, we know more about what he went through, but he went through a really dark phase that he didn't share with anybody. Typical of cases I've had of patients taking these drugs. And he committed a crime that was horrendous in his eyes. He can't even recall committing it. And if he were to designate in his own mind the worst possible crime, short of murdering someone, this was that crime. It's as if he went to the opposite direction of the whole trajectory of his ethical, highly ethical and moral life. I may be going to trial in the first case in a couple of weeks. In the meanwhile, next week I'll be off to do a trial in Canada of a young man who was taking Prozac. He got more and more obviously agitated and disturbed on the Prozac. Doctors didn't respond. And he abruptly, with relatively small provocation, invited two friends over and stabbed one of them to death in a single thrust of a knife. These drugs make people dangerous to themselves. They make people dangerous to others. The Canadian warnings on these drugs actually speak of danger to self and others. Our warnings talk about specifically suicidality in children, youth, and young adults up to age 24, which will be very relevant to Bob Bruin's discussion of the military and these drugs in the military, because many of them are 24 and younger. We're facing catastrophic reactions to the widespread use, not just of antidepressants, but of a whole variety of drugs that produce disturbed behavior, and indeed every psychoactive substance from marijuana and alcohol and LSD to all the psychiatric drugs, all of them can produce highly disturbed behavior. In fact, this is what we know about psychiatric drugs, that it's hard to prove they're useful, but every clinical trial shows they're dangerous. Think about that. The manufacturers do one trial after another trying to show they're useful. They often fail. They have to struggle to come up with two trials showing they're useful. But in every single clinical trial, however short, it will be clear that compared to placebo, the drug, while not necessarily being useful, is harmful, causing a wide variety, all the psychiatric drugs, a wide variety of abnormal behavioral reactions, mental reactions, people doing things on the drug that are dangerous to themselves and other people, having painful emotional experiences that the people on the placebo, the sugar pill, are not having. So I thought I'd give you that as a little bit of background in introducing Bob Bruin. Bob is an editor-at-large on NextGov, nextgov.com. He's the author of the weekly What's Brewin', B-R-E-W-I-N, What's Brewin' column, covering government technology and other government-related activities. I first heard of Bob Brewin in the early 70s when he was the co-author of a marvelous book, The Tranquilizing of America. And I actually benefited from reading that book, and it influenced my books over the years. A really, really good book. You can still get it, I'm sure, online. And its principles are not outdated. It's sort of like my book, Toxic Psychiatry. The principles are there. They go on and on. Only the details change. Bob Brewin's Tranquilizing America. Some very good stuff on children in that book, as well as on the drugs in general. And I'll let Bob tell you about that. Bob tells me that after that, he made a solemn oath that he would never write about psychiatric drugs again. I'm not sure why he made that oath. But in his work as an investigative reporter and editor, he came upon the over-medicating of American soldiers, something you all know I'm very interested in and I testified about before Congress. That's on my website. And Bob came up with new material and new data. So he got back at least temporarily in this business. He tells me that he may only be here for half an hour. We'll see how it goes. Bob Brewin, hello.
Good afternoon, Peter. Couple of notes. Thank you for the introduction. I just, you know, when I said I never wanted to write about psychiatric drugs ever again, I just, it's a really complex subject. Plus, when I wrote the Tranquilizing of America and then went around doing lots of publicity, I was followed around by, doctors from Hoffman and LaRocha, manufacturer of Valium. So it made for an interesting dialogue, but I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. And about a year ago, I started poking around at reporting on the use of psychotropic drugs in the military and found out that this was the tranquilizing of America all over again, only in some cases far worse.
One of the points my wife makes about the way the drug companies operate is that they find a top-down method of pushing drugs on people through welfare or disability programs, through schools, through nursing homes, and of course we have a marvelous top-down way of pushing drugs through the military. Tell us some more about what you learned about stuff.
Okay. Well, we've now run 10 articles in a series called Broken Warriors, which is available on our website, www.nextgov.com, which is part of Government Executive Magazine, which is part of Atlantic Media. I had to get the plug in there for the boss. When you talk about a top-down pushing of drugs, the U.S. Central Command, which runs the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, has a psychotropic drug formulary which sort of staggers the mind. And Dr. Bregan and I talked about this in the first article I did in this series. The CENTCOM has a formulary. If I'm ready to deploy overseas and I'm on Xanax or Seroquel or Valium, then I am given, with the exception of Seroquel, and I'll get to that, 180-day supply of these head drugs before I deploy. Do you think that's a good idea, Peter, to have 180 days supply of head drugs in my pocket?
Well, I think it's so many pounds, it's going to weigh the soldiers down. I mean, it boggles the mind to think about these young men and women walking around with 180 days of addictive drugs. I think one of them was Xanax XR that they were giving out. I think they were giving out a stimulant drug for 180 days. And even some neuroleptic drugs disguised, because they were saying they weren't giving out the antipsychotic neuroleptics, but they were actually giving out Utrophon, Triavil, which are combinations of antidepressants, old antidepressants, with old neuroleptics, Trilofan in particular. So it boggles the mind to think about what the effects are on these soldiers. I mean, for one thing, we know they're going to trade the drugs. I know that from other sources. They trade them. They're going to party with them sometimes. They're going to get addicted to the drugs and have more difficulty because they've only got the one consistent dose, but the drug is going to demand more of the person, more and more, like, you know, take me more, take me more. That's going to happen with Xanax or any stimulant drugs that the person's on or any tranquilizers the person's on. All these drugs are disinhibiting effects. But Bob, maybe do you have in front of you the different 90-day and 180-day lists of drugs?
Yeah, Seroquel is given out for only 90 days and in 25 or 50 milligram doses. Others, like Xanax and Valium, are given out for 180 days. And the end result is that 20% of the 1.1 million active duty troops as of June 2010, or 213,000 people, were on one form of head drug or another.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible data. And this is the first time, I mean, with the Iraq War and with Afghanistan, it's the first time that any troops on active duty were getting psychiatric drugs, which is astonishing. I've checked that with people from who worked in the past, including healthcare providers in the service, and it's true. This is the first time. It's a tribute to the power of the pharmaceutical industry, its ability to make a market for itself, the ability to get psychiatrists to do anything, no matter how stupid. My colleagues, this is a demonstration of how they'll do anything, no matter how stupid. They'll give a Xanax to a soldier prescription for the drugs for 180 days. Now, Bob, is it your understanding they're just carrying all these drugs with them, or do they get prescriptions to fill at the pharmacy along the way?
No, when you deploy, you get 180 days supply.
Yes. That's crazy.
Deployments are a year, then you can reorder when when you're down to maybe 10 days. You can reorder through the DOD mail order pharmacy and get another 180 days.
Oh, I didn't know that. So without any demonstration of supervision, you can reorder, or do you have to see a shrink?
No, you can just reorder.
Oh, my God. And think about how little supervision. I mean, who is supervising these soldiers? Well, their corporal. Well, their sergeant is supervising them. But the corporal and the sergeant may also be on drugs, and who's supervising them? One direct result of all this, I believe, is the escalating suicide rate, completed suicide rate in the military. It used to be well below in the general population, and it's now at least as high or higher than in the general population. And it's escalating. That's the main fact about it. It's escalating. Now, some of that undoubtedly is from the horrific conditions of urban warfare, where you're supposed to be taking care of the population and helping the population and befriending the population, while in the evening the population's shooting at you and planting bombs in the roadway. So it's horrendously difficult, and the long deployments and the frequent deployments. But without question, to give young men psychiatric drugs, right in the age group that the FDA, and women, in the age group that the FDA says is the most dangerous age group. And included in the warning is not just suicidality for this age group. There's also a string of things that includes impulsivity, agitation, anxiety, insomnia, mania, hypomania, hostility, aggression. These are all quotes from the top of my head, but they're quotes in the string of adverse effects that's repeated 2, 3, 4 times in the label for the antidepressant drugs. It's really quite a horrendous situation. Has there been any response to your writing about this?
If you go to our series of articles, there's comments from just a lot of plain ordinary citizens. There hasn't been any military, official military response on whether they want to re-examine the psychotropic drug policy. They keep updating it. And what's interesting is every year the Army conducts what is called a mental health assessment team survey of troops deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Last year's report was released on April 30th. The report for 2010 is due out later this week, and I have a hunch it is going to shine a light on the use of psychotropic drugs on the battlefield.
Have you got that? Could you just read down the list of some of those 180-day drugs that you can take for 180 days and get refilled?
Okay, I'm scrolling down here, Peter, so you're going to have to bear with me for a minute.
Okay, I apologize for putting you on the spot. I should have told you ahead of time. But I remember I was swore that Xanax XR was on there, long-acting Xanax, that antipsychotic drugs were on there when they were supposedly not, because they're combination drugs with Utrophon and Triavil, which are just combination drugs with the neuroleptics. I can't remember whether there was stimulants on that 180-day list. It was long. It was a long, long list.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that we were talking about suicide, is the Army last April released a suicide report, and prescription drugs were implicated in 1/3 of all the suicides.
That's amazing data. That's amazing data. Now, what happens to these young men is, of course, they come home, and their brains have accommodated to these drugs. Every time they try to come off of them, they're going to feel weird and crazy and feel like they're really in desperate condition. In fact, if they have PTSD-like symptoms, they're going to be worsened. I mean, think of the adverse effects of Xanax and the adverse effects of the stimulants. And the stimulants and the antidepressants. Well, they all can cause manic-like conditions where you're out of touch and you're feeling grandiose and weirded out. They all cause insomnia. They can all cause insomnia. They all can cause agitation and irritability and anxiety. They can all cause things that look just like PTSD. And also head injury from the bombs going off can look like that. So here are these poor soldiers and some of their well-meaning healthcare providers, the social workers, psychologists, nurses, not the psychiatrists, but the well-meaning psychologists, social workers, nurses. They're trying to figure out what's head injury, what's PTSD, and they're not informed enough to really usually even have an idea that all of this can also be caused by, mimicked by, and worsened by most of the categories of drugs soldiers are on. Even the indifference and withdrawal you see with PTSD, well, Seroquel will do that to you in one dose. So we're taking these situations and hugely compounding them, the trauma and stress by giving these psychiatric drugs out. I think it's an appalling situation.
Here's part of the list, Peter. Antidepressants, 180-day supply. You get 180-day supply of Paxil, Prozac, Cinequan, and then probably my favorite drug name and the head drug name in the entire planet, Wellbutrin. Doesn't that make you just feel warm and fuzzy?
It does. But if you take it, it's very stimulating, giving you insomnia, mania, violence, and suicide. So Wellbutrin was in there, and go back over that again for me. Wellbutrin was in there.
Wellbutrin, Paxil, Prozac, Cinequan, Budoprion, Celexa.
Well, stop a minute. Now, the Celexa, Bupropion, Paxil, the Prozac, these are drugs with these huge warnings about them. So here we got a soldier. He's out in the sands or out in the rocks or out in the mountains. Maybe he's in an outpost. Maybe he's being shelled. One of his buddies getting killed. He's got to be making friends with the people that are acting often as his enemies. He's got a cell phone, and maybe he gets to communicate once in a while with his girlfriend or his wife, and he's wondering what's going on at home, and he's worried about that. And on top of that, he has under his own control all these drugs, under his own control. It's crazy-making. Army, military, stop. This is so crazy-making. What else is on the list?
Well, then if you take it down, then you might need an upper to get to the middle. So then they have stimulants, a 90-day supply, no refill, Adderall, a couple of brands of amphetamines, a couple of brands of methylphenidate. You can probably pronounce that better than me. And then Ritalin.
Which is, they're actually repeating brand names with generic names. All right, so the stimulants, they got really wise about. You can't refill them. You got to only take them for 90 days on your own. No reputable physician gives 90-day prescriptions for stimulant drugs because it's just too easy to start abusing them. It's the problem isn't that if you take a stimulant drug once or twice a day that you're going to become heavily addicted in 90 days. The problem is that you're going to take it for a couple of days and you're going to notice that in between doses you don't feel so good, or you notice you're getting a little strange, and then you end up abusing it. You take 10 at a time. Why not? You're 21 years old. You're doing it. Did it at home. Your friends did it at home. Or you sit down with your buddies and you make a salad out of it, or a cocktail, I guess is a better metaphor, out of it. Because you're unsupervised, you're young, and you're under horrendous stress. It's unconscionable to be giving 90-day supplies of stimulant drugs, street drugs. All the drugs you mentioned are street drugs. All of them are Schedule II in the DEA. They're all Schedule II, which is the highest, most addictive drugs known in medicine. No, it's just a tragic situation.
And then if you want to go back the other way chemically, then we've got, you can get 180-day supply of Ambien, Ativan, Clonopin, Lunesta, Restoril, Valium, or Xanax.
That's unbelievable. You can get 180 days of downers. So what do you do then if you're a soldier and you're tensed and you're freaked out and you're just dealing with enormous pressures and you've got another tour of duty you didn't expect and you just don't know how to carry on the war because you're not supposed to be a killing machine for what you were trained. You're supposed to be an ambassador from America. And it's just all – I mean, why not? Why not take a handful? And, of course – that's what some of them are doing. Obviously, I know it from report, but I also know it from common sense. Obviously, some of them are taking handfuls of these drugs. Again, Army, stop it. Be smarter than the psychiatrists. And I don't know what place in the afterlife these psychiatrists belong in who are prescribing, who are enabling this drug company marketing coup by giving 90 and 180-day doses of these drugs. It's unconscionable. Bobby, more thoughts about all this?
Well, the other problem here is after they hand these things out, they have no way of tracking their use in theater or whether or not soldiers are prescribed more drugs when they get into theater. Last Wednesday, Dr. Jonathan Woodson, who is the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, testified at a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee that the House Appropriations Committee, that they're finally trying to determine how to track drugs automatically that are prescribed on the battlefield. They haven't done it yet, but he said that they brought some information technology specialists on a trip to Afghanistan this February to figure out how to do it. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have been going on for a decade, and they're now trying to figure out how to capture prescription information at the point of presence on the battlefield. I find that hard to believe.
Bob, this information is so valuable. It's insanity. Insanity. Giving out prescriptions for loading soldiers down with pill bottles for 90 days or 180 days of the most dangerous psychoactive substances in the world with no supervision, in most cases with the ability to reorder without supervision, and it's not even being monitored to see what happens to them, or even if they get more drugs from the local dispensary at the front lines. This is such a bizarre situation. I don't remember myself being so involved in outrage in a show because, I mean, this is just too much. These young men and women are not trained to handle psychiatric drugs. They're barely trained to handle the urban problems of relating to the population. They're mostly trained as soldiers, and we're giving them drugs that are going to make everything they do more difficult and more dangerous. We're giving them drugs that are illegal for pilots to take. Pilots, not just commercial airline pilots, but if you've got your Piper Cub and you like to take it up on weekends or rent one on weekends, you can't take these drugs and fly. I know that. I was a consultant to the FDA, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Agency, about why pilots shouldn't be taking antidepressants, let alone stimulants and antipsychotic drugs and so on and so forth, and downer drugs like Valium. So this is a critically horrendous situation, and you're so to be commended for staying on top of it, Bob. In about a minute, any thoughts here? Let me say, in about a minute or two, it's going to be break. Would you like to come back and talk some more about this?
Sure.
Maybe talk about your initial interest and how you got involved in the Tranquilizing of America? It's up
sure,
to you.
Well, yeah, we can continue here, Peter.
Okay. Well, what do you think about all this? Am I exaggerating in how horrendous I think this is?
But there's more to the problem. The Army also has an inability to track the mental health records of its troops deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq. We did a story in March that the Army has no way to consistently track the mental health status of soldiers deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, and that it finds itself overwhelmed by paper records. Not only that, but even though they have a plan to code the paper records and then eventually scan them, the system that's supposed to scan them is still not been deployed to where the records are being sent.
Do you think this is typical of the Army, that it's so incompetent and such a huge, unwieldy, incompetent bureaucracy? Or do you think it's worse, as I often find, where psychiatrists and psychiatric drugs are involved?
I don't think it's a sign of incompetency. I think it's a sign of an Army overwhelmed by too much war for too long with too few troops.
I think one of the solutions that they've found to that problem is
they've got too few troops and too much war, then drug the troops they have.
You know, I think it's that, and then on top of it, you have this vulnerable situation, and in moves the drug companies, and they can always find unscrupulous psychiatrists who don't deserve to practice medicine to give out soldiers for 90 and 180 days these kind of dreadful, dreadful medications. This is Bob Bruin I'm talking to, and of course this is Peter Bregan. We'll be back. Listen up, everybody. Listen up. This is Dr. Peter Bregan, and we are talking about some of the most horrific abuses of psychiatry going on in the world today. Can't overemphasize this. The drug companies, in all of their brilliance, their cynical, immoral brilliance, have figured out how to get a vast, captive population of unwitting victims to take their drugs en masse, huge numbers in the hundreds of thousands. They have found that they could work through the military psychiatrists and whoever else up top has been corrupted to give, for the first time in history, in Iraq and Afghanistan, psychiatric drugs to active military, to give them bottles full of 90-day supplies and 180-day supplies to young men and women of the most dangerous substances like amphetamines and the newer antidepressants and the antipsychotic drugs and, I mean, Adderalls, amphetamine. I can't imagine a more dangerous situation than to give youngsters under pressure, carrying out our country's commands, filling our country's needs, risking their lives under the most difficult circumstances, and then being bamboozled by the spellbinding effects of psychiatric drugs that numb them and their judgment about what the drugs are doing, that numb them to their own emotions, that make them erratic, that can make them irresponsible, that can drive them to literally mania. Xanax causes mania. Stimulants like Adderall and amphetamine can cause mania. Antidepressants like Prozac, Paxil, and Celexa, which they're being given, commonly cause mania. One study showed that 9% of psychiatric hospital admissions are caused by psychosis, caused by the very antidepressant drugs we're giving to these people. Other studies show that Adderall causes psychosis in a significant percentage of people in the clinic. 8-9% will show some psychotic symptoms from stimulant drugs. It goes on and on and on, not to mention numbing them and sedating them with tranquilizing addictive drugs. And then imagine what they do with the drugs, how they're going to be tempted to abuse them, trade them, maybe even sell them. I haven't heard about our soldiers selling them, but certainly they party on them. God knows they party on them. I've heard people on the front come back from the front lines telling me it's a miracle that some of these young men who come back from a combat situation and take handfuls of the stuff because they have them. They have the handfuls, you know, the consequences for them. Bob Bruin, hello. I've given you a little rest. How you doing?
Just fine, Peter. Thank you. I think we also need to look at the consequences of this of the tranquilizing of the troops. Over half, there's the 625,000 Iraq and Afghanistan veterans enrolled today as of December 2010 in the Veterans Administration healthcare system. As of this December, half, more than half, 313,000 were being treated for mental health conditions. That's four times the rate of the civilian population. What do you think of that, Peter?
Well, I think it's a product of an evil system and a product of the wear and tear of war, both. I think that, in a way, probably every soldier, male and female, who goes through combat in Iraq or is even near combat in Iraq or Afghanistan is going to have aspects of post-traumatic stress disorder. I think it's inevitable because post-traumatic stress disorder is the normal reaction of a normal person with a normal brain to unusual stress. It's almost impossible to see children murdered, to see your buddy shot, to be terrified for yourself a good part of the day, many days of the month, and not come home a different person with some nightmares, with some insomnia, with jitteriness and irritability, and ultimately some with depression. And oftentimes this shows up later. 2, 3, 4 years later, something happens in the person's life, an accident, a death in the family, a threat, a physical threat, or something comes up, and the whole thing comes back, and you have the kind of a post-traumatic fear and terror and anxiety that you might have expected days after, but which has now been delayed by the marvelous human mind that just can put things off and put things off, but now comes breaking out. So on the one hand, you have the condition of the soldiers who are veterans, and then you have a VA system which is behaving no better than the part of the military system that was giving the soldiers drugs in combat. You have a VA system that, for example, in my experience, instead of helping a soldier with counseling, which is what helps get over all this trauma, even what helps with head injury, believe it or not, the best treatment for head injury, we had a whole session on this by experts at our conference in April, that head injury, the best treatment for head, and by the way, we will be making available audio of the conference in a few weeks. The best treatment for even head injury is human relationship. We don't know a physical intervention, but we know that human relationship can really help a person recover from head injury by giving them more confidence, more strength. And we certainly know that that human relationship, genuine engagement and caring is the best thing for traumatic responses. So what are we doing instead of doing that? In the VA, you give a drug. I have soldiers I have legal cases where soldiers have come back from the war, talked about waking up at night in horror, seeing a flashback in front of their eyes of a battle scene, and they go to the psychiatrist who spends 6 minutes and hears they saw something and says hallucinations, gives them the worst possible drug, and puts them for 10 years on Thorazine and Haldol and now Zyprexa and Risperdal, and the soldier ends up with brain damage from the drugs, the veteran, and ends up with part of dyskinesia, terrible, disfiguring, painful bodily movements that are uncontrollable from years of exposure to these drugs. So we compound the situation with the dreadful circumstances of the veteran, And then the maltreatment in the VA, which I believe is routine, and the giving of drugs instead of decent counseling to these soldiers. And some of them are real, real heroes. Real heroes. I'm working with a veteran now who has a lawsuit. I can't go into detail about it, or he may have a lawsuit. But this soldier got addicted to huge doses, iatrogenic addiction, that is doctor-caused addiction, to huge doses of benzodiazepines. And then he had to pay to go to a private hospital to get withdrawn from the drugs. He had used his life savings because the VA wouldn't pay for a hospital. They want him to do it at home. He's living alone. They want him to do it at home. So, whoa, Bob. It's the VA's not behaving well. But I'm talking a lot. Your thoughts?
I want to go back to some of the statistics because I think they're rather startling.
Even though
we're handing out antidepressants like candy and Halloween, the story we did in March shows that 122,000 soldiers in the VA healthcare system today are seeking help for depression. Now, if the antidepressants were working so well when they were handed out in the battlefield, why don't we have 122,000 veterans seeking help for depression? Does that indicate that drugs work, Peter?
Well, we know from meta-analyses that the antidepressants aren't. Aren't what? Aren't antidepressants. We know it from meta-analyses. What happens is two studies get cherry-picked from a bunch of failed studies. That's all the FDA requires, is do sort of statistical studies to show some sort of an effect. And it's only like a 6 or 8 week study. Sometimes they're 4 weeks. It's meaningless. The approval process does not show the drugs are safe and effective. And the antidepressants don't work. I believe they're causing more depression than they're curing. People can't get off them. Then they get hooked on them. And they have a terrible, painful time trying to withdraw from them. They crash. They get depressed. They get suicidal. By the way, one of the big lessons, and I just want to remind my audience when you listen, is, you know, don't rush to get off these drugs either. Don't rush to get off them, because withdrawing from the drugs can be very, very emotionally dangerous. And that applies to these soldiers. I mean, if you're 180 days on Xanax and you run out, you could be in very serious trouble with withdrawal reactions. And you wouldn't be able to tell your withdrawal reaction from your stress, because what is the withdrawal reaction from coming off of Valium or Xanax after 90 or 180 days? It's insomnia, it's anxiety, it's irritability, it's jumpiness. It looks exactly like PTSD stress symptoms. So think about that too for the soldiers who decide not to follow up on their meds and just stop taking them abruptly. All the psychiatric meds can cause them serious withdrawal problems. You know, so much of this is about psychiatry, but so much of it also is about bureaucratic health care and bureaucratic care in general. There's a lot of good people in the VA, good psychiatrists in the VA. They stay about a month, I think. Then they're gone. Because time and again I hear from people that they had this one good psychiatrist for a month and then he was gone. Because the system itself makes it so hard for people to deal properly with their patients that they're being pressured to do these drugs and not to refer to counseling and not to give counseling. You have more data for us, Bob? You tell me when you wear out of data.
Now that we're talking about the VA and its treatment of veterans, last week the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California ruling in a case that was brought in San Francisco in a district court in 2010, said that the Veterans Affairs Department displays, quote, unchecked incompetence, unquote, in its care of the country's veterans. The suit was originally brought by an outfit called Veterans for Common Sense and Veterans United for Truth in July 2007, charging the VA had failed to make mental health care services available immediately and widely available for returning veterans. The suit was dismissed at this district court level because the judge ruled the two veterans groups had no standing under something called the Administrative Procedure Act and that the VA had constitutional immunity from such suits. The Court of Appeals came down soundly against the district court and said in this ruling, having, quote, having chosen to honor and provide for our veterans by guaranteeing them the mental health care and other critical benefits to which they are entitled, the government may not deprive them of that support through unchallengeable and interminable delays. And then, and I think this is, a decision that will resonate for years to come, the appeals court says, quote, there comes a time when the political branches have so completely and chronically failed to respect the people's constitutional rights, the courts must be willing to enforce them. We have reached that unfortunate point with respect to veterans who are suffering from the hidden or not hidden wounds of war.
Amen. Amen. Now, when was this?
This was a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on May 11th.
My birthday just happened.
Yeah,
you're really keeping us up to date. I was 75 on May 11th,
traveling
by air out to do some legal work in California, and just back last night at midnight. But I wouldn't miss my show for anything. Bob, that's amazing, fresh news and very, very important news. It's a double-edged sword, though, because what our vets don't need is more traditional biologic psychiatric care, and that's the problem. They don't need more psychiatrists. They need fewer psychiatrists. They need more counselors, social workers, psychologists, counselors, educators, ministers, trained in counseling, caring, devoted, thoughtful, loving people. And don't have to be psychiatrists. I met a man this weekend who is a major, but in the Salvation Army, who is visiting a prisoner that I'm working with as a legal consultant. And he went in just on his own time once a week to see this prisoner and talk to him and to give him exactly the kind of counseling that's needed, a loving, caring, engaging, empathic, and in this case, very spiritually oriented counseling, which will not be for everybody, but many people in this country are very believing, Christians and Jews and other religions, and the Salvation Army, of course, is a religious orientation, and he was helping this man hugely. So there's no psychiatrist in that facility. They come every 3 months and prescribe. It kind of sounds like the Army. Every 3 months, the psychiatrist comes to prescribe. What we really need is human services that are human, brought about by humans, delivered by humans to other humans, that address human needs, like the need for security and understanding and caring, sense of responsibility, empowerment to take charge of one's own life, as well as basic therapeutic understandings for the soldiers of what is PTSD and what is it like to have a lingering head injury. So it's a double-edged sword. I hope along the way the court, the Ninth District Court, learns the difference between abusive psychiatric treatment, which is the norm. It's becoming the norm. Look at it in the VA and the military, and real counseling services for people. Bob, other thoughts on any of this? We've got about 5 minutes.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up, non-traditional forms of care. At the House hearing last week, Lieutenant General Eric Schumacher, who's the Army Surgeon General, said that the drug of abuse that he is most concerned about and believes is most prevalent is alcohol. And if you look at some of the suicide statistics, you see that some of the suicides are, you know, alcohol and head drugs in combination. I have had a query in the Army since January on how well they have embraced one of the most effective means of care for addiction and abuse, which is Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I've had a query in since January, and how many bases in the United States Army have on-base Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and for some odd reason, in 5 months, they have not been able to answer that question. Even though the Surgeon General says that he is more concerned about alcohol than any other form of drug abuse.
What do you think of that? I'm so glad you're doing this work, Bob Bruin. It's just a tremendous service. And let's not forget also the sudden death syndrome that is so prominent now. We're getting batches of sudden deaths in veterans who are being in various communities where there are a lot of veterans. They just die in bed, and it's a lot of these drugs they're on cause heart attack, which is the usual cause of sudden unexplained death. It's an arrhythmia, usually an arrhythmia. And the antidepressants can cause arrhythmias, the stimulants can cause arrhythmias, and the also the antipsychotic drugs, the newer antipsychotic drugs cause arrhythmias. So that's yet another problem we're inflicting on our soldiers and our veterans. It's like a microcosm today. This is a microcosm today of the vast damage being inflicted on our society and on the world by psychiatry gone wild. Bob, any other thoughts in the last couple of minutes?
No. I just think that, you know, a lot of scrutiny needs to be put on the use of psychotropic drugs on the battlefield. As a Marine Corps Vietnam veteran, I do not know, you know, from a real practical point of view, how I could have possibly functioned on patrol loaded up with a benzodiazepine. I also have a feeling if someone gave me a 180-day supply of a benzodiazepine, it probably would not have lasted 180 days.
For sure, for sure. Well, let me thank you before I finish up in the last minute or two. You've been listening to Bob Bruin, B-R-E-W-I-N. Bob is an editor and a writer and an investigative reporter. His column is a weekly. It's called What's Bruin? What's Bruin? With one of those hyphens or whatever they're called, those little curlicues. What's Bruin? And it's on nextgov.com. Nextgov.com. You can actually get directly to Bob simply by Googling Bob Bruin. There just aren't that many Bob Bruins in the world. And I want to thank you for doing this.
The other one is the technology officer of Sun Microsystems, so don't get me confused with him.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Thank you so much. Now, listen, for those of you who want to learn more about this, I don't tout my books on the air much, but everything I'm talking about on the air with Bob about the dangers of psychiatric drugs, every class of drug, is detailed beyond what should be human capacity in the second edition of my book, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry, second edition. You can get it overnight from Amazon.com. You can get it from me on Breggin.com, B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com. And for the horrific effects in a very graphic way, also a relatively new book, my other book, The Companion Piece, medication madness, the role of psychiatric drugs in cases of violence, suicide, and crime. It will give you some of the stories I outlined for you today. It's based on in-depth look at least 50 cases where I actually read the medical records, interviewed survivors, read depositions of the doctors themselves who gave these drugs. Sometimes I went to the crime scene, autopsy reports, 50 cases of in-depth examination of how psychiatric drugs can drive you or anyone else to madness. And I want to emphasize, it doesn't take incredible stress. It just takes a psychiatric drug.
Thank you.